The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Man in Line's on now. We're open line through till 1, so call 66 1368. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Whatever's on your mind. Manx Cares urging motorsport fans to ensure the necessary travel insurance policies in place during their time on the Isle of Man. Thousands of people are going to come to the island throughout the TT Racing fortnight, but apparently the people who don't have insurance could get charged. Really charged for all this. Everything is chargeable if you're outside the UK, that is, outside the British Isles. I just wonder how much of the you think that's actually is that actually enforced. Well, we'll find out more as the day goes on. Anything else on your mind? There was a texter 450 dropped a note in just to say, I listened to the DEFA broadcast last week, it was, when Claire Barber was here and Tim Cowsell from DEFA. He said the department's raised serious concerns about more vannins' impact on local fisheries in its public consultation response. So do they agree that our centuries-old fishing industry, which provides reliable jobs, says Texter 450, consistent revenue and food security, holds far greater long-term value than a short-term wind farm with unproven local benefits? If the project is approved and the impacts proved to be significant, what plans does DEFA have to protect and support our fisheries over the next two decades? Well, and you talk about the, you know, what are the unproven local benefits? Well, money is the benefit, really. I mean, we all know that if the wind farm goes ahead, it's going to be a heck of a blot on the landscape. It just depends how much we get paid for it. I mean, do we all accept that everybody has their price? We have our price. I mean, we've got gorgeous views. But if we are going to lose a view on the east coast of the Isle of Man, it's got to be worth it, hasn't it? But at the moment, we don't know how much it's going to bring in. We don't really know what's been offered, what's the possibility, and if there's any resilience regarding electricity. And Ørsted have said they're going to put an interconnector in from Preston through to Groudle to bring some of that electricity back and give us a second interconnector. And apparently we do need the second interconnector, the one that's down below Manx Radio at Port Skillium, which goes to Bispham in Blackpool. It's over 20 years old. I mean, it's electricity plus, I think it's fibre optic as well. So it's very, very important for the resilience of electricity. And of course, we export as well. We flog electricity when the Paul Rose power station is over capacity. But we'll find all the details out at some point. It's just that we don't quite know when. Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. What a lovely day again. A very nice 19 Celsius at the moment at the airport.
So, beautiful. Beautiful.
Just nice. Yeah. It was mentioned yesterday that India had recorded 55 Celsius. That's not actually true. The measured temperature was 47.6, and that was at a Banda in Uttar Pradesh. What this is what I think would be termed, I don't know, what would you call it? It was the heat index, or feels like 55. The actual temperature coming off a land-based meteorological station, not an airport, in Banda, was 47.6, which is nowhere near any records. So the 55 was the perceived temperature, nothing to do with any records. So I thought that would be interesting for people to listen to.
Okay.
More vanning. I'd like to start by saying there is no amount of money worth destroying the island's views, fishing industry, culture, tourism, ecosystem, energy, travel, etc.
Oh, come on, Julian, everybody has their price, surely.
Well, funny you should say that, because we're asking a couple of questions at the moment which are not being answered. How much, and what about the decommissioning in the future? So if you run the numbers on current inflation, the touted amount that keeps getting thrown around fairly recently, actually, is $2 billion over 35 years, which is $57 million a year. So the 57, like, I think it's on the Heinz tomato, isn't it? But Ralph Peake said it won't start for 10 years. So $57 million is going to be worth $44 in 10 years. 10 years after that, it will have dropped to only giving us $27 million.
Have they said it's going to be index-linked?
Well, this is what it is. If the deal is nothing to do with index-linking, because I've listened to hours of that stuff, and they will not be drawn on this. In 2056, it'll only be worth $16 million to us. And we're being told, oh, $57 million. But in real terms, what it'll actually be worth is 16. And if you go all the way to 2071 when it's finished, you'll only get 8 million. In real terms, it will have gone from, oh, it's 57. We'll have 8 million by the end of it. And that's just shrinkage. That's just holding position. So you've got to ask the question, what is this? Because if they don't want to talk about inflation protection, then it's going to be worth 8 million by the end of it all. So that's not even a... I mean, you know, you couldn't even do the Ramsey seawall for that. On top of that, decommissioning. At the moment, the current cost for decommissioning is about $500,000 for every megawatt. And they're talking about Morvanin being 1,400 of those. So that would be around about $500 million, $550 million. And it probably would be more than that, because they don't even have the cranes on the barges that are even tall enough to reach up that high yet. But what is that $500 million in 2071 when it's time for Morvanin to be pulled down? So there's $3 billion. So this draws another question to all this. Who's going to be left holding the baby? Because Ørsted's business plan usually is they don't hang around. What they tend to do is they sell off the wind farm as soon as possible after it's constructed, and then they use that money to move on to the next one. And what is the recent history of Ørsted doing this? So you've got west of Duddon Sands offshore wind farm off Cumbria. Ørsted sold off 25% of that in April last year. The London Array, they've just divested themselves 75% of that last year. Hornsea 1 and 2 off East Anglia, 80% got rid of. Walney, the whole lot was sold off in December 24. And so it goes on.
Well, we're assuming, Julia, we're assuming that under the law of contract, any obligations for decommissioning will be passed on to the next person who owns it. So, and Ørsted have been quite clear on this, that they will be responsible for decommissioning.
Yeah, and you've just raised exactly the point I'm about to make. Hornsea 3 was one that's been widely touted recently. Who was that sold to? That was sold to Apollo Global Management. So this is starting to sound a bit like the steam packet when it got sold off to the Macquarie Group and ended up coming back to us after it was strip mined. Ørsted are also selling off all their European wind farms to Copenhagen Infrastructure Partners.
Yeah.
Guess who acquired them? Guess who acquired them in 2024? BlackRock. Well, BlackRock.
Yeah, BlackRock have got a part of that. They don't own all of it.
Right, but as a controlling interest, Apollo has got a controlling interest now in many of the offshore wind farms, which means they've got a controlling interest in energy generation across the country.
But remember that 51% of Ørsted is owned by the Danish government, by the Kingdom of Denmark.
Who are now talking about selling it off, because then the Danish people are fed up with bailing them out, because they're giving them huge amounts of money. All these assets have been sold, and Ørsted's price, as of today, is still 90% down. It's 30% down on when they became Ørsted in 2016, when Dong Energy changed to Ørsted. So you've got to ask the question, who is going to end up honouring all these secret deals in the future? If Ørsted goes bust in the interim period, I mean, they're 9/10 of the way to going bust now, really. So you've got to ask this question: who's going to honour all this stuff that we've been told about? And If we're being sold this 57 million and they will not be drawn on this, I mean, the 2 billion's not even guaranteed. That's only going to be worth 8 million a year by the time you get to the end of this wind farm, if they don't agree to inflation proof it. But are they going to be giving us 152 million a year by the end of that? Because that's what you'd need to compensate for the deflation or inflation by the time you get out to 2071 at the end of this thing. So, and don't forget, the wind farm is going to be degrading all the time. We've talked about, you know, the blades get roughened up and they the gearboxes wear out and they have to start putting things in. So, you know, all these things together, none of this makes any financial sense whatsoever, except that we are going to get stiff with the bill in the end, like we did with the steam packet when we had to take Macquarie's, what did they say? They had achieved the most efficiency gains had already been realised, so they sold it on. So they strip mined it, basically.
Well, yeah, so but when you say strip mined, I mean, the steam packet still had vessels. It had vessels and it had a contract. It had the services, the users agreement. So it had vessels and it had a stream of revenue when Macquarie sold it to that pension fund that then went bust. And then obviously the Banco Espirito Santo took it, and that's where we bought it from. So there were assets there. And also regarding Ørsted, when you say it doesn't make any financial sense, it obviously makes financial sense to them.
Except, of course, what they were saying was things like capital expenditure cycles are becoming more expensive. It was nothing about the fact that it's a lifeline to the island.
Yeah.
This was a corporate that was looking at a balance sheet, and they're not interested in, will the agriculture be destroyed because all the stuff that they have to bring on the boat is more expensive by a factor of three than almost anywhere else.
Well, of course, they're going to be looking at it from their point of view, Julian. They're not here, they're not on the Isle of Man to represent the Isle of Man. That's our government's job, and we vote our government in to represent us. The government's first job is to keep us safe and to provide an environment for us on the Isle of Man. That's the government's job. Ørsted's job is making wind turbines and making money.
And then selling them off to corporates right after, just like they've done with Hornsea 3 to Apollo. So, a bit like Manx Telecom. I mean, you know, we don't own it anymore, do we? It's the same kind of... Are we happy with Manx Telecom? Are we happy with Manx.net paying 65 quid to Jannara now?
It's a bit late.
Exactly. It's a bit late. A very good point, Andy. Your perfect point. It's a bit late. So we need to think about this seriously, because I think this planning appeal, the hearing, consenting hearings, that's the hurdle that they want out the way. Hence the fact that they're saying, don't think about the financial benefit. So, don't know, we're in tricky times at the minute. I think that was Mr. Smith on the panel said this is a tricky situation because all the benefits go to England with the decarbonisation. And what do we get? Well, sorry, we can't tell you.
Okay. But
you're going to get all the harms. Anyway, thanks, Andy.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that today. And many people say, why didn't you ever get Ørsted on to talk about it? Because it's in the middle of the planning at the moment. Ørsted are reluctant to come on Man in Line. But the option is always open. If anybody from Ørsted would like to come on Man in Line and chat through a few things and answer a few questions and meet you, the listener, then they are more than welcome. Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. Just following on that last few words you said, that they're reluctant to come on because they're in the middle of a planning, but they're not reluctant to call meetings in various parts of the island to crow about their good things that they're going to do. They don't want to listen to anything bad. They're very selective in what they want people to hear and what they want to bring forward. But they're having meetings, advertising meetings. They're advertising these on the various radio stations, the papers, but they don't want to hear, or they don't want to come on and actually have questions asked to them on the radio, because that then will commit them to something. But that's not what I've come on for. I'm just wondering whether any of your listeners have gone through the same, to use a word, situation. It's not a problem. Well, it is in a sense. This time last year, May the 23rd, I went into Manx Telecom shop in Strand Street, and I made a request to have fibre instead of the ADSL brought to my house. because I know they're going to do away with ADSL, the copper line, etc., in a couple of years' time. So I thought, well, let's get it in while the going's good. I've not heard anything officially from Manx Telecom, and I doubt whether they will now because it's been sold. But I still do not have fibre. I've had no conversation as such from the Manx Telecom. I still have the receipt as such from Manx Telecom from May the 23rd. That's the date last year when I went in and made application for it. And the only thing I've heard, in a sense, is when I rang up one day and they said, oh, we're having to do a survey and we're having to conduct a check on your premises, etc., because you know where I live, I'm in Anaco, and they've got to do a check on your house for their permission to do it.
Right.
Well, there's already telephone lines coming in. I'm talking to you on one of them now on a landline.
So has anybody around Anaco got fibre?
One thing I heard was I was the only applicant on this particular road, but I was at a house one day and they were fitting fibre not 200 yards from where I am.
Right.
But not only that, but because they were so close to a house next door, they'd done that as well. Yet I haven't heard a word from them regarding any adaptability of our house. And the house next door to us has been empty since before Christmas. So there's no problem getting in there, in on the outside to go up the wall where the existing cables go.
There's so just tell me again, when was the last time you spoke to them, Howard?
Oh, Lord, it must be, well, 5-6 months ago. And they seem to be hell-bent on this sale more than their customers. But I'm just wondering whether anybody else has come up with this, because as there is an existing cable system coming into the house, they have a company, a private company, that goes around and checks the conduits, etc. But these must be already there. And I'm certain that the school, which is close by us, has fibre. And there's cabinets less than 200 yards from my house advertise and get fibre.
Yeah. But okay. This is the question then. If anybody's around Anaco, and you said there are people on a couple of hundred yards away that have got fibre.
Oh, yes.
So give us a call or just message or text in if you've got fibre in Anaco. And how long did it take you to get it? That's the important thing. Because Howard's been waiting at the back of the queue forever.
Well, I'll tell you that I've still got it on my phone, the receipt that they emailed to me from the shop. It's the 23rd of May, 2025. And in all honesty, I haven't had proper information from them except when I rang up, and that's what they told me. So why is it taking so long? And in a couple of years' time, the copper cables, and they say this will happen, I will then not have any internet otherwise. So it certainly makes an attractive choice of going to satellite.
Mm.
And I've had this phone number, the number I'm talking to you now, for close on 50 years. That's how long I've been with Manx Telecom.
Okay.
There was a four-digit number when I first got it. So that's how long I've been with the company. And that was the attitude that seemed to have adopted. So it'd be interesting to know if anybody else,
okay,
not necessarily in this area, but the island is not a huge place as regards fitting of these, and they got a big lump of money from the government to do this job. So anybody else on the island has been waiting stupid length of time to have fibre fitted.
Okay. All right, Howard. Well, we'll check. We'll see what happens.
Thank you. Cheers, Kate, Andy.
All right.
Bye now.
All right. Now, look, 24 minutes past 12. Are you having problems getting fibre? Obviously, Howard is at the moment. It was much trumpeted, and as Howard said, it was well over £10 million of public money that Manx Telecom got. And of course, that's now been sold. Manx Telecom's island-wide fibre rollout apparently is still happening, but the company's changed how it communicates rollout dates. Many areas appear to have gone quiet after the initial surveying stage. Now, according to Manx Telecom, detailed surveys are often carried out months before any actual engineering work starts, particularly where they need to decide between underground ducts, poles or other infrastructure options. Right, the latest official position from Telecom is that more than 90% of homes and businesses on the Isle of Man can now access fibre broadband. And the government says that the copper phone network will be phased out progressively. It started last year with a full switch off targeted for 2029. Now that suggests the rollouts move from early expansion into a slower phase, really, I guess, of connecting remaining or more technically difficult properties. Max Telecom confirmed in late 2023 that it stopped giving precise estimated fibre dates for every property because later stages of the rollout became harder to predict. So in many areas, residents may have seen surveys or markings last year without getting further updates. You can check availability through the postcode checker on Manx Telecom's fibre pages, and some locations are being progressed in phases along with the wider copper network switch off. It's a programme overseen by CURA, the Communications and Utilities Regulatory Authority. But if you're having trouble getting fibre, then by all means do get in touch. This story about Manx Care charging people. They're urging motorsport fans, visiting motorsport fans, to ensure that they've got the necessary travel insurance policies. Thousands of people, or tens of thousands, are coming to the Isle of Man. Andy Reid is from the overseas visitors team at Manx Care, and he said not everybody ensures that the right documentation is in place ahead of coming here.
Healthcare is free here for UK visitors under the reciprocal health agreement. But if something went majorly wrong and that person had to be flown home or repatriated back to the UK, then that's not free and that can cost a considerable amount of money.
Yeah.
So that's why we tell people to have insurance. And it works both ways. Isle of Man residents that go to the UK, mm-hmm. They get free healthcare in the UK under the reciprocal health agreement. But if they had to be flown back to the Isle of Man, the hospitals in the UK would be asking for their insurance as well.
So are there any sort of locations around the world that are a bit more tricky than others, or is it just that the Isle of Man, you know, essentially you just need to be covered for it full stop?
The advice is to have, you know, especially people from outside of the UK absolutely needs travel insurance. Emergency care is always free. That's the way we are here. So Nobles Hospitals, ED, the Minor Injuries Unit in Ramsey, free to anybody that uses it. However, it's the point when if you're considerably ill or you're injured and you have to have surgery or you have to have further treatment, which means you become an inpatient into the hospital, then that's when the charges will apply. So, you know, you're okay, you can walk into ED. If you can be resolved in ED and yeah. you walk out, that's free of charge and that's great. You know, that's what we want to do. That's what, you know, we're good at doing that. But it is that eventuality that if unfortunately you need a bed and you need further treatment or surgery, then that's when the costs apply, and that's when insurance, especially if you're from, you know, further afield than the United Kingdom, that's when you're going to need insurance because everything is chargeable.
Andy Reid from the overseas visitors team at Manx Care on the benefits of getting travel insurance if you're not from the Isle of Man or from the UK. S dropped a note in to say, I hope none of the taxpayers' money for Manx Care is being used to support extra services for TT. Every visitor should have insurance. And the sponsors should be paid for extra staff and services. Which sponsors? Obviously, emergencies should be treated quickly and everybody cared for eventually, but all of it should still be paid for. Local people on the island shouldn't expect a lesser service during TT, and waiting lists shouldn't go up. I don't lack compassion, says Essie, assures us, but other countries don't give leeway on payment for medical services, so we shouldn't be treating the TT any differently. Guaranteed that anytime you go to places like Spain, they want your credit card before you get through the door. Here's John with us now. Hi, John.
Hello, Andy.
What's on your mind?
Manx flags at the airport.
Go on.
For quite a number of years, as long as I can remember anyway, there was two Manx flags flying above the entrance into the main building at the airport. There's been no flags there for at least 5 months, maybe, probably a bit longer. I contacted Jason Morehouse on the 3rd of March, pointing this out to him. So he got in touch with the department or the directors of the airport. And then, lo and behold, the next thing, around the 8th of March, the flagpoles were removed.
Removed?
So, removed. And the reason for it being health and safety. But
Health and safety. Who are they threatening?
I don't know. But the flags have been flying there for years. There's no flag, Manx flag, to welcome visitors to our island. And I think it's absolutely disgraceful. So last week, I contacted Tim Crucall by email. I copied the Chief Minister into it and also Jason Morehouse. And I got a reply from Tim Crucall that they're looking into it and hopefully they would have at least one flag flying for TT to welcome our visitors. But yesterday, I received an email from Jason Morehouse, and they pointed out he must have been told that the DOI are having extreme difficulty in sourcing the supply of a flagpole. Can you believe that?
There's a shortage of flagpoles, apparently.
A shortage of flagpoles, apparently, or they cannot source the correct flagpole for the airport. I think it's absolutely disgraceful.
Well, it doesn't send out the right message, does it?
It doesn't, Andy. It doesn't. I think it's disgraceful that people arriving on the island, that they're not the Manx flag, they're flying proudly to welcome them.
Well,
and I hope Minister Crucall is listening to this and the Chief Minister, so they will get something done before race week.
Okay. All right, John, we appreciate it.
I'm not sure if anybody else had noticed, Andy, but...
Isn't it funny, though, you always think that they're there. Always think you've driven by them thousands of times, and always think they're there, and obviously you noticed that they weren't.
Yep, I have. But the response from... I sent an email to Jason Morehouse yesterday. I said they're trying to fob you off with very weak and poor excuses.
But the thing is, John, this is not just... it's the port. We've only got two ports, really. Douglas
Correct.
Seaport and the airport. And the visitors need to say that it's the Isle of Man and the flag's perfect.
Yes, and but what happens if the Lieutenant Governor goes away on business and there's no Manx flag to welcome him back, him home?
Okay, all right. Yep. Well, thanks for raising that, John, and we'll keep our eye on that, certainly.
Okay, Andy.
Good to hear from
you.
Thanks for that. All right, 27 minutes before one. I hope Tony dropped a note in to say, I hope government's keeping an eye on the new building site next to Braddon School. Another couple of hundred cars need to get out of there next TT week into the access road. It's going to be a struggle. We need to look at widening the access to cope with the extra cars. Gaz said Tim will refuse to have a climate change referendum, saying we have an election to express our views. But we don't have the DEFA climate change progress report on or necessary details about wind farm costs and benefits. So how are we mushrooms? Make your own joke up. How are we mushrooms supposed to decide how we vote? Julian's right, says Liz D. I said ages ago, abandoned engineering will probably be the future. Well, thank you, Liz. That's your. I have to point out, Ørsted say time and time again, till they're blue in the face, that they will be responsible for decommissioning. So the day that the proposed wind farm, if it happens, when it happens, when it's finished, they will be responsible for cutting it all up and taking it out and getting the blocks of concrete out of the water. Southern Germany has been 223 said Southern Germany has been left with redundant wind farms and the cost to remove them has fallen on ratepayers in various towns. Is that true, 223? And a note in says, Ian, excellent points made. As far as I'm concerned, be careful what you wish for will be my view. If bottom dredging is banned, says 790, it will only be good for sea life, says 790. But do remember, we have got a scallop industry on the Isle of Man. So quite how that's going to be affected, I don't know. I mean, on the Moor Van is 6 miles out, 8 miles out or so. Is that a scallop dredging site? Sue said, tell her how to keep his copper as long as he can. The fibre isn't as good as they reckon. No signal, weak signal, signal dropping off, TV saying no internet. It's constant, it's rubbish, says Sue in Balaf. Have you contacted Manx Telecom? Because I'm sure if you contact Manx Telecom, they'll send somebody out to remedy that. I've got to say thanks to, this was a message in, just say thanks to the RNLI in Port St Mary. The Frank Martin with their D-class inshore lifeboat was launched on Monday afternoon after those two people, the two kayakers, were in difficulty off Langness. The alarm was raised by a member of the public who dialed 999. The kayakers also contacted the Coast Guard. The lifeboat crew of three launched and arrived on the scene at 4:20. They located the kayak. They'd launched from Derby Haven, but after leaving the shelter of the bay, got caught up in the strong tidal currents running along the coastline and couldn't make any progress. Literally, the tide was too strong. They were safe and well. They got lifeboat jackets and took them back to Derby Haven, where they were met by Coast Guard officers and checked on the scene. So if you know anybody who's coming to the Isle of Man, and particularly over the next fortnight, anybody heading out onto the water, always check the weather, always check the tide times, because some of the currents are vicious around the Isle of Man and you get caught in them and who knows what could happen. You need to understand the local currents. Always carry a means of calling for help, whether it's a VHF radio, wear suitable flotation devices like a Mae West or something like that. Have a fully charged mobile phone in a waterproof pouch or a VHF radio, because even in calm conditions, tidal currents around the island can be stronger than expected and conditions can change quickly. Those kayakers got off very, very lightly, because who knows what could have happened. The construction industry on the Isle of Man needs to be taken note of. Construction Isle of Man, the organisation, say they're facing the perfect storm of soaring fuel and material costs and a serious shortage of skills. Companies are under increasing pressure. Now, the head of the industry body, Construction Isle of Man, is Derek Clarkson.
The last month has been a very tumultuous month for the construction industry, and it's being felt across the board. There is many factors to the war in Iran that has led to, I always call it the problem at the pump, and then the problem that comes 30 days later for construction industry companies that have materials prices and procurement, on a daily basis. So you have the problem at the pump, where instantly we've now got a 20% increase in terms of fuel prices and oil prices. Now, some people might say that everybody has that at home. They all have to pay that 20% more at the pump. But for a lot of companies that are running machinery and, haulage sector, wagons, it's a hard-hitting thing to have 20% straight on the bottom line with fuel. That then passes on to a bigger industry problem, which is, the effect on the manufacturing of goods and the effect of shipping of goods. So we have, anything that involves a petrochemical process, whether it be UPVC pipes, windows, other products like that are immediately hit by price increases. Precast products that use, obviously, manufacturing plants that are heavily energy and fuel based, these prices have went up 20% plus. We have a kind of baseline of 20%, but some are far more expensive. And for contractors and companies who are maybe working on some fixed price work, that creates immense pressures. And that, coupled with what is, some people say it as a phrase, the cost of living, but it's a very, very real problem. And we have the supermarket problem, we have the pay at the pump problem, and for businesses we have the materials and price increases. And then we have the glorious fuel surcharge that hits the boat. And for every pallet of goods that we bring on the boat, we have a fuel surcharge that's now applied on top. So to say that it's been a stress time for construction companies on the island, I can't understate how hard it is for the sector. It's really putting pressure on companies, it's putting pressures on the bottom line. I do hope that every company gets through it, but all I can say is it's a very stressful time for the construction sector.
That's Derek Clarkson from Construction Isle of Man. If you've got any thoughts on that, by all means do get in touch. Text, email, call and WhatsApp, and David's on with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. I just want to remind our listeners too that remember when we did the airport and all the huge blocks that came from Norway?
Oh, yes, at the end, when they extended the runway.
That's right, and the world was going to come to an end, and there was going to be no fish, and whatever now. And what's happened? We can land bigger planes, can't we? Except I'm led to believe, and maybe worth checking out, Andy, is that the plane that went on one of those trips into foreign parts was delayed about 30 minutes. They were about nearly a couple of hours on the runway because they forgot to put the luggage in the boot.
Oh, crikey, yes.
And then coming back, I'm led to believe, too, from a good friend of mine anyway, told me it took them 30 to 40 minutes to unload the luggage off towards the carousels.
Yeah.
I
don't know, I mean, this may be wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong, but apparently there's only one gang of people who can unload the planes. So they unload one plane, then have to go back and unload another one, and that can take, 20-odd minutes by the time they've got all the luggage and have to go back to the next one. And that's why lots of people are waiting a long time at the airport.
Yeah, and I believe there was a load of golfers there too, so there must be people that went on the trip and maybe come on and give you 10 pennies worth. But what I was going to say too, do you remember we did the harbour? Do you remember the Stabbards, that good old-fashioned Stabbard?
Yeah, looking at them now.
Yeah, and do you remember that was going to be the tide shifts and we never get any boats in or nothing's going to happen? And where are we now? We may have bigger boats and maybe it takes a bit longer. But anyway, it works, doesn't it? So
The Stabbards made the harbour a lot calmer, certainly.
Yeah. And what are we going to do for the future then is, should we go and then, Bonzo may come on in the next couple of days, but anyway, should we go nuclear? I mean, that's going to be something. Electricity is the issue we've got is because we're in a massive network in the Irish Sea, England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and we got cables running in under the sea there. And we can shunt power, even the surplus at the power station is shunted to the UK and sold off for a profit.
Well, the fact these small modular nuclear reactors, I mean, they are small. They're the size of a building. It just depends. But, David, come on, who's going to put the hand up around the island and say, we'll have one here? Where would you put one?
I know. Well, I'm going to say Foxdale and upset all the people who live in Foxdale. But anyway, I'm prepared to take that on the head. But we have land out there, Russian mines and stuff like that. There's all sorts out there. And we've got to consider, it's not now, isn't it? It's like 10 years' time, 20 years' time, when we're not here. And what do we leave for our kids for the future? Memories.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Thanks for being with us today. And let me go to, we've got Eddie with us now. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, Andy, all right, mate?
Very well, thank you.
I foresee a bit of backlash for them naming Foxdale there. Eh?
Well, the thing is, if we were to, and these modular reactors, I mean, basically, it's the type of reactor they have on nuclear submarines. So if we were to have one, who'd have it? Who'd have a nuclear reactor, albeit small? I mean, not huge things, but it is a nuclear reactor. Where would you put one on the island?
Well, isn't it nice that we're even considering anything other than wind? I just want to react to what conversation was earlier on about Ørsted saying that they would dispose of or decommission
yeah.
everything. If the history of the wind turbines is anything to go by, we seem to have forgotten everything. Throughout America, there's wind turbines lying on the desert floors, valleys here, there, and everywhere, whilst the court battles go on about who gets rid of them. Germany is another place, like somebody else mentioned there. Have we forgotten also that in America, when some blades flew off, they had to close the beaches for, I think it was about 7 or 8 miles, and it cost the American people millions and millions of pounds to clean up the beaches from the blades, which are made of fiberglass and other things like that. There is a history at Ørsted and the MUA of telling just nothing but a pack of lies. almost everything they have come out with.
Well, let's hang on, Eddie. We'll say Orsted will be giving their version of events. Let's put it that way.
Of course they will, yeah. But we've already shown that it doesn't happen what they say. That they're salesmen. As simple as that. They're trying to sell us something, and like Julian has said over and over again, it's not viable. It's not cost-effective. It's not clean. It's not green. There is nothing good about it. So, for God's sake, which this government change their tactics and look at other things. Nuclear, geothermal, gas, anything but wind. Wind will never, ever pay for itself. The history of it, we've been studying it for years up here. We might as well call ourselves experts on it now. There isn't anywhere in the world where you've got cheaper electricity. And yet people keep coming on saying you're going to get cheaper electricity. Absolute nonsense. They say it's clean, we'll get rid of it. Oh, yeah. Look at the history. They won't get rid of it. They pass it on to the taxpayers here, there and everywhere.
Well, I think one point needs to be made, that nobody has found an effective way of recycling the blades.
Exactly. So why are we even considering the damn things? Where's the common sense gone? Somebody else a couple of weeks was going, we need a ministry of common sense. There is no common sense in anything we seem to be doing with this government at the moment. I hope that they don't get any more damage done until they're voted out, honestly. It's just ludicrous that we're even thinking about wind turbines.
Okay, all right. Eddie, good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us today on Man in Line. Thanks for your opinion.
At Bond Fabrics, we're not just a fabric shop. As well as curtains and upholstery and dress and costume fabrics, we've knitting and crocheting wools, made-to-measure curtain and blind service, plus poles and tracks. Visit Strand Street, Douglas, call 611856 or see bondfabrics.im.
We all love the excitement, atmosphere and sounds that motorbike events bring to the island. But if you desire peace and quiet... come to Manx Glass and Glazing for the latest high-tech windows and doors, conservatories and more. Whatever type of property, you'll find a great deal of choice and styles to suit at Manx Glass in both UPVC and aluminium. To get in touch or view the stunning range, visit manxglass.com.
Walton's for electricals. Great service, great price and stock to go.
For everything electrical for your home, it has to be Walton's. At Walton's Electrical, we have a huge stock of ready-to-go items at incredible prices. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 till 5, on the Isle of Man Business Park, Braddon. Find us online at waltons.im and follow us on Facebook for our latest offers.
Walton's for electricals. Great service, great price and stock to go.
For a wide range of wood-burning stoves and a complete installation service, visit The Snug in Ramsey. And we don't stop there. Kiln-dried firewood and full aftercare service, including chimney sweeps and maintenance. Call The Snug in Ramsey.
The countdown to the 2026 general election is officially on. On Thursday, the 24th of September, you'll get to have your say on who should represent you in the House of Keys for the next 5 years. But what are the things you really want to know from your candidates? How they feel about wind farms? What they do to improve healthcare? Or how they plan to tackle government efficiency? Whatever it is, if you have a burning question for those standing, we want to hear from you. You can find out how and everything else you need to know about the upcoming election on our dedicated election website. Just head to manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
11 minutes before one, Wednesday lunchtime on the Isle of Man. We moved house and gave 3 months' notice, as Texter 155, to get fibre set up at the new property. It was all going well until we actually moved. Then it took 3 weeks to get anything done. All the issues apparently were due to, quote, the planning team, which seems to be treated as some sort of mysterious third party and the go-to excuse, as 155. Are you OK now? Terry, I live just up from Annika and I've been told by Manx Telecom that I have to pay £250 or more to have fibre installed, as they have to dig under the property. I live in a Douglas Corporation property and I'm on benefits due to disability and illness. I certainly can't afford £250, so I don't know what's going to happen. I've been with Manx Telecom for over 30 30 years, and I'm anxious about the switchover when it happens. I could be left with no internet, says Terry. We talked yesterday about when students leave the Isle of Man and never come back, and the fact that they've been partly subsidised by the taxpayers on the Isle of Man for their tuition fees. And a message in saying, how can Daphne Kane say they can't follow up where students are working after they graduated from university? Daphne Kane intimated they didn't have the resources to follow up, i.e. if people left the Isle of Man, got a university degree and then worked elsewhere and didn't ever pay tax, that they didn't have the resources to find out about these people. Students are easy to follow. Like all of us, they've got a national insurance number. If they don't pay tax here, it's obvious they're going to be working across. If there's no record of tax being paid, the government here, within 5 years, they should pay back the $30,000 in fees they've received. English students don't get a penny from the English government. They have to pay back their fees from student loans. But every year we pay it all. That's £10 million, and a third of the students may never pay a penny back to the Manx taxpayer by living and working. It's wrong. The money should go to first-time buyers who want to live and work here and help with their deposit. Well, there is also the thought, though, that these young people, who presumably will have been children here, that the tax and insurance and what have you was paid by their parents. So their parents have paid tax for many, many years. For an 18-year-old to go to university, the parent may have been paying 18 years' worth of tax. But that's a point anyway. And G said, years ago, playing youth football, I had to sign forms to be covered by club insurance for any injury. So Manxcare should be charging foreign visitors and should also charge locals for sports injuries under relevant insurance policies. Here's a message in from Paul, who just says, the airport's broken in many ways. I do hope the new director of airports comes in and sorts the whole thing out. Regarding construction, says 068, I keep wondering why they keep building houses when the population hasn't changed in a decade. Doesn't add up. Well, the population's going up. That's one thing. The census proves that. Where would you put a small nuclear reactor? I think they can be mounted on a barge and floated off the coast. Crikey, can you imagine if the thing just floated away into the Irish Sea? Now, but I mean, I am being frivolous, but please, there's a serious suggestion. Which community on the Isle of Man will put their hand up and say, we'll have a nuclear reactor, stick it here? Would you put it, as David suggested, in remote areas? Where would you put a nuclear reactor? I mean, it is... they're safe, I mean, because it's the type of one that's on a nuclear submarine, but I mean, really? Where would you put one? Could you canvass the East Coast and just say, we won't have the wind turbines, would you mind a nuclear reactor? I'm extremely exhausted with everything at the moment. Or is it me? Does everybody think this assisted dying bill should be dropped? To some people, it feels like it risks the weak, sick and vulnerable not being properly protected. Surely, seriously ill patients should receive better care and improve palliative care instead. Currently, I'm trying to improve my own health by stopping smoking. We'll see what happens. Samo, I think stopping smoking is a good idea because apparently they're not full of vitamins. I also remember the windscale exhibition at the Villa Marina in the early 80s. As for the proposed wind farms, I think they'd have a very negative visual impact if they're allowed to progress. Well, nobody's saying they won't, Sammy. The wind turbines off the East Coast will be a heck of a... I mean, they'll be a heck of a mess in terms of that. What we're promised is that they will give us lots and lots of money. Here's a message in from Liz. Hello, Liz. And just said, what's this I hear about forged £20 notes on the Isle of Man? Yes, Charles Lees from Port Jack Chippy. They got a fake £20. These are UK, these are English fake notes, not Manx ones. The counterfeit note was discovered amongst takings when they were counted at Lloyd's Bank. This is Charles Lees from Port Jack Chippy on these fake £20 notes.
It was brought to our attention Tuesday after we did our banking from the Monday. We'd obviously had a customer in, but Lloyds Bank kindly notified us that one of our notes that was banked was a fake English £20 note.
And what were the telltale signs?
Well, the things that they weren't allowed to show us the note for legal purposes, but they did let us know, give us some pointers to look out for, which were the two lines that go down under the ultraviolet light don't shine in the correct lighting. I think they come up as black lines as opposed to what they should have been. And also there's a silver emblem on the sort of middle to top left hand side, which should be embedded inside the note, but you can actually pick away at it. It can flake away from the note. So they're the only two things to look out for, but apparently they're quite good fake notes. So to the naked eye, I would imagine that they're going to slip through like they have done with us.
And the danger, of course, is the worry is that there's more of these things around as we're coming into TT.
Absolutely. You know, we've got a lot of people coming into the island. There could be lots of them floating around. This could genuinely be a customer that already had it in their possession that's come in, or it could be somebody that's trying their arm, basically. So fingers crossed there's not too many out there, but I would advise people to just have a close eye when they're receiving these English £20 notes.
And of course you would be contacting the police about this.
Yes. We got through to the radio this morning, so they were first come, first served, but we'll be notifying the police about it as soon as we can get through to them.
Well, all you need to do, and you heard, take a look at these are English £20 notes that are forged, and as Charlie Leese from Port Jack Chippy said, it could be somebody just happens to have brought one, or it could be somebody with a stash of them that are trying to get rid of them. So if you're involved in a cash business, or indeed when you're getting cash back in change, do check, particularly if it's an English £20 note, because we don't want you going short. There's a simple way around this: only buy things that cost less than £20. Then you won't get a £20 note back in change. Or am I just being simple? Am I being simple? It wouldn't be the first time. We have Sizewell 3 being constructed on our doorstep here in Suffolk. Says this WhatsApper, most people are embracing the employment opportunities. And Dick said the same thing. There is actually a nuclear reactor off the east coast in Sellafield. Oh, there is, yes. But that happens to be on land, doesn't it? Going to be back with another open line tomorrow. And remember, in the meantime, if you want to get in touch, you can call the WhatsApp, the Man in Line answer phone, 682-631, or email maninline@manxradio.com. That's it. Thanks for being in touch today. Thanks to Chris on the phone. Enjoy your Wednesday. WINT.